Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and our goal here is to bring on special guests that can inspire and educate while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And our guest today fits that definition to a T. Our topic, which is also the title of his new book, is Ditch the Act. Reveal the surprising power of the real you for greater success. Our guest, Ryan Folland, is a craftsman of communication who coaches leaders worldwide on the art of simplifying spoken messaging and being more human. If you've listened to this show, you know that I talk about that a lot. His 313 method is a process whereby core messaging begins as three sentences, condenses to one sentence, and then boils down to three words. Now, I'm looking forward to learning more about that. Ryan is a four-time TEDx speaker and is recognized by Inc. Magazine and Brand 24 as a top marketer, as well as named by Entrepreneur Magazine as a top personal branding expert. Now, Ryan is currently the managing partner of Influence Tree, a branding accelerator. He specializes in helping companies and their leadership harness the power of authenticity by teaching them how to create content that reveals their whole self to drive growth and loyalty. I love that. Ryan, welcome to Answers Network.
Well, ahoy. I've got plenty of answers for just about any question. And a slight correction, I'm actually no longer with Influence Tree. That was a couple of years ago. That's okay. But I am still here, and that is actually par for this conversation. You know, there's a lot of different opportunities that we take and different roads that we might go on, but at the end of the day, no matter what it is that you're doing or what company it is that you're affiliated with or the startup that you have in the moment, you are always you. And that is the reason why I've always pointed people to my personal website. Because you bring that brand equity with you wherever you are, and you don't lose your identity as a result of what you're doing. It's what you're doing, and the other things sort of support that. So there's my first little soapbox tangent.
No, and I love it. And back as you were saying that, I was thinking that with training that focuses on leadership, authenticity, growth, and loyalty, is there any chance that we could make your training mandatory for politicians?
Gosh, I really wish that was the case. I think they should all read my book because there are actually some political examples that you can point to where when politicians, if they don't get in front of what they did and it comes out, it's used against them. But it's when you come out in front and say, this is what I did. Yes, I did this. When you take it ownership of it, you take the power out of it. So gosh, yes, please.
It reminded me of a story when I was thinking about your book being put in front of all of them. There's a story that every month a magazine produced by Larry Flint is delivered every month to the Senate. And his way of reminding them that I guess they voted something against him many, many years ago. So he sends that. So I think if they can send a magazine like that and it somehow reaches the Senate, I don't know why we can't get together and maybe figure out a way to have your book reach them.
So, you know, where there's a new idea, there's a way. We just have to find the way.
Yep, I agree. Now, so what's some of the stuff in the book, one of the things that you say is that exposure is important and that it helps cultivate connection and grow personal brand loyalty better than any polished persona can. Can you explain that one?
Yeah, if you think about business in the most basic terms, there are people who are interacting with each other. And I really feel that at the core of doing business, people want to do business with people, right? Yeah. It's that customer service person that you talk with. It's the experience that you have online. It's knowing that there's a real person. You know, if you think about it, how frustrated do you get when you're on the phone? You're like, I want to talk to a real person. Like there's something that we want with just like, there's that connection. And so with that being a baseline, I think that if you try to just put forth the most polished persona I'm the badass. I am amazing. Look at what I've done. Look at my accolades. You know, hear me roar. It gives you less of an opportunity to relate to people because not everybody is that successful. But guess what? We all trip. We all make those mistakes. We all have aging parents at a certain point. We all have either kids that we're losing sleep or someone sick, or like life happens. And so I really believe that people don't care as much about your story of success. I feel that they care more about how they see themselves in your story. And a quick example, just us before the show was starting, we started with what was in your backdrop. That let me know about your son. He plays hockey. I told you I played hockey. You're like, well, where did you live? You're here in Huntington. Wait, my kids went to this middle school or this elementary school. That's where I went. And we just had this you didn't tell me about your accolades. You didn't tell me about how successful you were. You were just sharing like you. We talked about being at Palm Springs and how utterly hot it is. And we bonded on that. Like, I feel like I know you a little bit. But if you would have just, if the beginning of the show was, Ryan, tell me all the success you've had, and I'll tell you the success that I've had. It'd be like, and there wouldn't be that friendship. So I think that to get ahead in business today, you can't forget about the human component. And that takes many forms. But what I call ditching the act at its core is when somebody asks you, so how are you doing today, Ryan? Am I going to lie and tell them that I'm okay? And I'm going to try to, give you the answer that I think that you want to hear? Am I going to say, I'm fine, just because I don't really want to share what's going on? And it's like, that's the junction in time where you have an opportunity to be like, I'm actually pretty tired. This happened to me. Like, oh, you're tired too. And it creates a sense of honesty and relatability when you're just sharing how things really are. It is a fine art, because you can really turn people away if you just emotionally vomit on people at every given chance. That's not what I'm talking about, but it's these little genuine moments to share real stuff that might not be like stuff that you would put on your LinkedIn profile as like something that you're proud of. But these are the moments how we get to know each other, and we want to do business with people who we know, like, and trust. And the only way to get to know somebody is to get past the pleasantries and actually like get to some semblance of truth.
I couldn't agree more. And it's interesting when you were using as an example, and you used the word fine, excuse me. And I find that to be, you know, it's one of the most conversation killing answers. You know, when you go, hey, you know, I heard you went such and such, how you doing? Fine. It's like, okay, where do we go from here? So, I couldn't agree more that, that isn't something that I think is really being honest. It's not really showing any sort of vulnerability. I completely agree.
Have you ever heard of a game called Rose and Thorns?
No.
Okay. So it's a fun game that I don't know where I learned it, maybe like at camp a long time ago, but the idea is to help increase participation amongst a group of people and sort of reflect. So let's say that you're in, you're at breakfast and it's the third day in, a week out in Yosemite or something, and you're with all these people you don't know. A counselor could say, hey, everybody play a game of Rose and Thorns today. It's like, or like at breakfast. Okay. So you go around the table and somebody shares like a rose, which is, oh my gosh, it was so amazing when we were doing that rafting thing. And like, that was my favorite part. But the thorn is like, oh, but I totally hated waiting in line for that long. So what you're doing is you're giving something like your favorite moment and then like a really bad moment. And what that does is it gives people an ability to relate to both, right? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I hated that line too. That was crazy. And so if you think about it, I think people just go, I'm fine, because I don't want to like stress you out with my baggage, or I just don't want to continue the conversation, or I want you to think that I'm fine, even though like I'm not. An antidote would be like, hey, you know, there's some really cool stuff going on like this, but I'm also hitting a wall with this, or like I'm kind of struggling with this. So if you're not comfortable with being totally honest of like what's really going on, you can say, well, my weekend was really cool. I went to this festival, and then like, I also got some bad news from my parents about something that's kind of stressing me out. So you can kind of juggle between the two to get used to it.
Yeah, and I think that that also helps in the sense that using the example that you just gave, because there are times in which somebody will say, you know, well, I thought that it was me, you know, where you go, oh, yeah, I'm fine. Everything's great and stuff. But it really isn't, because I'm stressing over the fact that my mom's going in for an operation tomorrow or whatever. And the person doesn't know that because you didn't share it. So now they're thinking, well, gosh, actually, I guess he just doesn't like me, you know. And so, yeah, that's another way in which just showing your vulnerability, being honest, being real, can help communication and not make somebody else feel bad when there was no reason for them to.
Yeah. And I'll add on to this a little bit around giving people, if we're talking about being real, but sometimes that's like very esoteric. Mm-hmm. If you give people a real update as to where you are at the moment, it opens up the opportunity for them to help you out.
Yeah.
If you're an employee and you take the situation where maybe you have a parent that's at a medical procedure or something, like that's going to bring stress on you. And your boss sees mm-hmm. you and like, hey, how you doing? I'm fine. Thanks. You go on. But like, maybe you're not answering emails as fast. Maybe you're getting upset a little bit early. Maybe you just don't seem like you're your normal self. And it's obvious because there's something happening in life. But if you're mm-hmm. not honest with your manager, it doesn't give them the opportunity to help you, give you a little bit more space, or share a story about something that they relate to when their parent was had a similar procedure or something. So when you learn to ditch the act, it actually opens up a window for people to help you out. And the same thing happens on social media, where we tend to share all the good stuff, like, oh, this is amazing. But you would be surprised if you shared, like, let's say you were feeling down and out, and that's normal, it's just a weird day. You could literally say, hey, I'm feeling a little off today. Any suggestions on what you do when you're not in a good mood? And people will flock to the comments. They'll be like, oh, you need herbal tea. You need a massage. You need to get off get off Instagram. And people want to help each other. Yeah. But if you don't give them like an excuse to actually help, then they're flying blind. They're like, fine, you're just being a jerk today, but they don't know. And maybe they just need a hug. It's like, could be that simple.
Yeah. It actually made me think of something else. I met the woman that is the love of my life by having a conversation and her asking, how are you? What's going on? And I said, I'm actually having a real tough time right now. You know, my mom goes in for an operation because of her Parkinson's. And she's going in, you know, in like 3 hours. And, you know, I'm at the gym, I'm trying to work out, but I can't concentrate. And I shared that. And she proceeded to tell me about her mother's journey for 20 years of going through that. And it became a bonding point for us, because she made me feel better, you know, by being able to just have somebody I could talk to about it. And as it turned out, had I not done that, I might have missed what has become the most important person in my life, and you know, the one I'm dearly in love with.
Okay, so check this out for a moment. I appreciate you sharing the story, right? And one trick is to give gratitude when people do actually open up, because there's this inherent pressure that you feel like you're going to get judged, or you're feeling like maybe this is TMI mm-hmm. for this person. But I want to thank you. I appreciate you sharing that for three reasons. One, I have a good friend who is a sailor, and his wife has Parkinson's, and she is going through some challenges right now. Mm-hmm. And he's depressed because he can't get out on the water as much. And I literally just talked to them this weekend and had like a conversation, him just sharing how difficult it is for him. And I was just there listening, and he felt better afterwards. So I'm like, who, you would have never known that I had a direct tie to someone in my life who's impacted by Parkinson's. So now I know a little bit about you and your mother and your struggle. And there's like another thread that there's a little bit of trust here. I'll also share that when I first met my wife, wife of 2 years, but we've been together for 12 now, we met at a bar, and I had a really nice car at the time. I was looking dressed to the nines. So was she. And we met at a bar, but there was this moment of authenticity where maybe I had a few drinks and was just honest. But I was like, look, just heads up. Like, what you're seeing is not necessarily it. Like, my car's being repossessed. I'm losing my house. I'm actually in between jobs right now. I don't know when I'm actually going to make money, but I know I will at some point. I just want to make that clear. And she goes, okay, well, I don't have much money either right now, so I guess we're in the same spot. And I was like, okay. And it set the total foundation for like, why throw up a whole bunch of bogus BS to trying to put on some sort of an act, which you know is going to get popped at a certain point, and then you deal with that breakout. And so it's like, if you think of, if you're dating, there's this constant like pressure to look your best and only share the good stuff. But then we know after a certain amount of months, then like, then you start to ditch the act and then things unfold. So it's like, you get that stuff up front and it just really helps people connect. And I would assume that one of these listeners, maybe 10 of them, have had somebody or a parent with Parkinson's. Maybe they've been broke at a certain point. Maybe they've had their house foreclosed on. Maybe they've had a car repossessed. And now these little moments are like, hey, that guy Ryan, he's not different than I am. He's actually a lot more like me than I would think. And now we're relatable. And now I'm not just some person with a bunch of accolades. I'm just like, I'm just a ginger who also has similar challenges. And we're like all here together. So what, right? I mean, that's the magic. It's so simple. It's not easy, but that's how simple it can be.
Well, and as you were saying that, the thought that was coming to mind for me was, and there's probably also people out there that are looking for their soulmate. Yes. And they just thought, you know, maybe I should ditch the act.
Make it real from the beginning, and then you don't have to sidetrack, right? But it's something like, it's, I don't know what it is, something about like, it's not hard to lie. It's hard to like keep lying, right? Like once you tell the little thread, it just over time, it stretches and stretches. And you're like, it hurts a little bit, but you just cut it right at the beginning. You're like, I'm just going to lay it all out here for you. And this can be done in business. This can be done in relationships. This can be done in networking. You'd be surprised how many people put on these acts where it's so surface level and it just doesn't hit. But then when you meet somebody and you build a little bit of rapport and then you open up about something and then you connect, you're like, oh my gosh, we're such fast friends right now. And you want to continue that conversation.
You know, why don't you share, because I know that, you know, in your book, you share some of the lessons, but share a couple of defining lessons either that taught you or one of your clients, you know, how the value of truth, candor, and clarity, you know, became the key points that helped you build your personal brand or a particular story. One of the things I think anybody that listens to this show knows that I love stories, and especially success stories, but where somebody, by making that one shift, all of a sudden things started happening for them.
You know, believe it or not, I'm going to tell you a story about a pimple.
Okay.
So, I am a professional speaker as far as, you know, people pay me to speak. It wasn't always that way. And as a speaker, you have this dilemma, the Hollywood dilemma, right? You need the experience to get the gig, but you need the gig to get the experience. So there's a very, like, there's a huge chasm to get where it's hard for people to pay for you to be on the big stage because they're like, show me the big stage you've been on. You're like, but that's what I've tried to get. So I got this opportunity. It was a free opportunity, but it was on a big fancy stage with a large audience with a 3-camera shoot. And part of their pitch was, look, we're not going to pay you, but we'll get you the footage for your speaker's reel. And this would be a good brand builder for you. It's a good bridge. So I'm like, got it. This is it. So I drove up to Santa Barbara, go to this event. And it literally looks like you're in Vegas. It's like 100-foot LED screen behind, 40 feet high. I just never been able to speak in an event like this. So super nervous, especially because the 3-camera shoot. So it's like all the regular pressure is intensified. I don't know if it's that pressure, but I started to feel pressure on the top of my forehead. And it ended up that I had a huge crowning pimple, pretty much right smack dab in the middle of my forehead. So big and red. And as I'm in the green room, it literally starts to crown. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I don't know what to do. Like, this is the, it sounds so shallow, but it was like, I was really freaking out. So I texted a friend of mine. I said, hey, I've got this pimple. It's about to crown. Do I pop it or not? Like, what do? I'm going to go on stage. And he shared with me that I should tweet my request to the world. I was like, no way. I'm trying to be a professional speaker. There's no way I'm going to tweet, I'm about to go up and give a keynote, I have a pimple. And he's like, no, that's exactly what you're going to do.
Ooh.
So I tweeted out something to the extent of one of the biggest stages of my life so far. And I have a crowning pimple. I am stressed out and don't know what to do. I need help. I'm pretty sure at the hotel I broke the internet because it was a very Twitter-friendly conference, and I was surprised at how quickly the thing became viral within that community. I had Team Pop It. I had all kinds of GIFs. I had people telling me to get a headband with Simpsons GIFs. And then I had a friend of mine from Orange County who just said, use makeup, my friend. And then somebody else in the green room was following the thread, saw an advice about concealer. She came over with concealer and she's like, hey, I saw your tweet and like, I can do some concealer on it. I'm like, oh my gosh, awesome. So we concealed and I like felt great about the whole thing. I was like, this is cool. So I bust the doors open to go out on the stage, and the entire 100-foot by 40-foot wall was filled with images of me and my pimple pointing like this because it was a Twitter feed of everything that was happening.
Oh. And so
I literally walk out and it's like my face and the pimple plastered everywhere. I'll never forget. I ran out, grabbed the microphone. I'm like, my name is Ryan Follin and I have a pimple. And the whole place just erupted and the energy was palpable. And that was probably one of the best. I just felt free. And I was just like, yeah. And the reason I'm telling you this story is because people still refer to that tweet. It was a changing point in my life. It was the moment I realized that it's not about being perfect. It's about sharing the journey. And it was such a compelling moment for me, as simple as a tweet, sharing something as stupid as a pimple. And then I started to share more and more. And as I did, that's when my whole community started to catalyze. That's when I started getting a significant following that led to getting verified on social media platforms, that led to higher paid speeches, that led to a whole series of successes based on being a little bit open about that behind the scenes. So I'll never forget that. It was the pimple heard around the world.
That is a great story. And it's interesting because, it seems like in this day and age, part of it, people are going, what can I do to go viral? Who would have thought have a pimple?
Yeah, I was giving a corporate presentation to a company here in Irvine, and I had somebody come to me afterwards. She's like, I was at that conference with the pimple. I was like, but it's something like that helped me to recognize to not take myself so seriously. And I think that at the end of the day, whatever ditching the act means for you, it's a way to feel more comfortable in your own skin. And we're always looking to be more viral. I know executives who want to be more known for their expertise, but I challenge them because, I'll ask you this question, and if you're listening, you can answer yourself. What do you think is more important to your audience or more important to other people? Your experience or your expertise? If you had to choose, it might be a combo, but for the sake of argument, do you think people are more interested in Alan's experience or in Alan's expertise?
I can't believe that just happened. could you guys hear that?
No.
I thought my phone was off, and then all of a sudden it just rang. So apparently
we were staying on the ring, but hey, you're ditching the act in the real moment. You're like, hey, this is a real moment. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But would you like me to repeat the question?
No, I remember it. It's, I think they're more interested in the experience, that they want to know more of our experiences.
And I agree, but people don't think that, or they don't take action towards that. And here's the example. If you look at your LinkedIn and I read your bio, Am I going to read about your experience or your expertise? There's a 99.9% chance you're going to say, this is my expertise. I'm an expert at this. I'm a badass at this. Year over year of this. I've done this. Okay. So we tend to think, or at least we act on, we're going to show you the resume. We're going to show you all the good stuff. But here's like, let's get meta for a second.
Yeah.
You get experience only after you need it. You can't get experience without going through something. And when you go through something, that's when you actually learn. That's when you're fundamentally changed as a person. That's how you grow. And that's how you earn and gain your expertise. And so if you just go, I'm an expert, people might look at you sideways and be like, really? Why are you an expert? But if you say, look, this one time this happened to me, and that's really where I learned what it means to be a good leader. And so now my vision, my thought process is this way. And so when you share your experiences, it helps people see for themselves, as a result of this person cutting their teeth, I believe that they do have that expertise that I might need, because nobody wants to pay for your mistakes. And so for me, the changing point was when, like, I became an open book. In my book, literally, I share with you the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I filed for bankruptcy. What?
I said you could write a movie.
I could.
It's already been done. Never mind.
but it's a matter of owning your experiences and starting to feel comfortable sharing them. Because I'm sure you have a version of a pimple story. I'm sure we all have these versions of stories where we really had catalytic learning, but we might be embarrassed to share how we got it. And so I think that's the turning point, when in your content, you start to share these stories and the reasons why it's gotten you into the position.
Makes sense.
So when you share the stuff that you haven't necessarily shared, it's this opportunity for people to get to know you. And people want to do business with people who they know, like, and trust. But you can get to know me and decide not to like me, and that is okay. I think we all have this fear that we just want everyone to like us, but there's not enough time in the day for everybody to like us. If you put your foot forward of how you are, you can attract people who are on the same page, who vibe with you.
Well, and I think to add to that is that if you don't show your real self, which goes to your point about meeting your now wife, is that if they do start liking you, what do they like? They like the mask,
right?
Because they don't really know the real person at that point in time. So yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I know that, a lot of what you're talking about really sort of, flies directly in the face of what the general societal narrative that we're taught. But it does make a lot of sense. But you also write that a key component of building your personal brand is to let your fear guide you. This also seems counter to teaching. So how does this piece, how is this effective?
So your body has a natural sense of defending itself. And let's do an example before being fearful to warm up to it. One about worrying. Okay, so typically when we worry, it's our body's recognition that there's something that's really, really important to us. And so you can do one of two things. You can worry about it every single day and perpetually be worried by it. Or you can say, let me worry once really good. I'm recognizing that my body is reacting to this situation, but I'm going to really stop and I'm going to worry about it really good one time, make a decision and move forward. The same parallel happens with fear. A lot of times your professional development, you're scared of because it's new territory. You may be fearful of public speaking. You may be fearful of learning how to write a smart contract, even though you might want to know. You're a middle-aged man, and you, by opening up and saying, I have a question, you're actually letting people know that you don't know. And so there's a lot of fear around growth. And a lot of times our self-limiting beliefs or the things that we tell ourselves is the one thing that stops us because cognitive dissonance, we want to believe what we think is true. And if we don't think we're a public speaker, and that's what we say, and that's what we hear in our head, we're going to look for data that supports, oh, no, I'm not a public speaker. Yeah. So I like to tell people, thoughts become words, words become things, so think the thoughts that you want. Now, I'm not just saying positive affirmation, you can just change the world. Negative affirmations, actually, there's a lot of research on how they can be more detrimental than positive affirmations can be positive. But the concept is, if you're fearful, it's actually an indication that your body is going like, whoa, this is new territory here. We might actually have to learn. We might actually have to act. We might have to show a little bit of vulnerability. We're going to have to ask for some help here. This is a whole new territory. And so if you use that fear as a guide of like, actually, if I move through this, if I head in the direction of that fear, then I tackle it. I put the time in, and now I have that experience to which now I am closer to becoming an expert. And there's so many analogies. I love to sail. And so sailing is an analogy. Like, you can love to sail a small boat, but be fearful of a medium boat. You can love to sail a medium boat, but be fearful of offshore racing. You can be an offshore racer and be fearful of racing to Hawaii. Like, each level of fear is really the next level of growth.
I love it. We're speaking with Ryan Folland, and his book is Ditch the Act, Reveal the Surprising Power of the Real You for Greater Success. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis. West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We're speaking with Ryan Folland, and we're talking about ditching the act. So Ryan, we've got some questions and comments that have come in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to send in the questions, because again, oftentimes we'll get them, you know, the night before, or sometimes, you know, during the show. But again, we appreciate you taking the time to send us these. This one reads, great title. I've been promoting a similar theme for many years with my students, just speaking about thinking for themselves and embracing openness and integrity. For the young people who understood these words, they have gone on to do wonderful things and have achieved happy lives. I am almost finished with your book and wanted to say how much I have enjoyed it, and I am highly recommending it to my colleagues who are genuinely interested in inspiring as well as teaching our kids. And this is from Danielle in New York.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Danielle. And I think what I love about this is that the earlier we can reinforce these types of concepts, the better. And I'll tell you what, I come from a very accepting family. They're both educators, and you know, it's all about just inclusivity and diversity. But I will say that my dad is a man's man. And I grew up in a household where, like, I was, like, culturally, you know, men don't necessarily cry. Men take care of business. You don't show the emotions. You just get it done. You're a hockey player. Take your emotions out with violence. You know, like, you know, these things that aren't necessarily said, but, like, like we're ingrained. And so for me, this whole concept is so difficult. Like I literally faked it to try to make it. I bought the Range Rover with Rimini red rims because I thought that if I had an expensive car, people would take me more seriously. And to some extent, they did at certain elements, but I was literally leveraged so hard that I was like hiding from the repo person, still trying to keep that facade up. And people would think that I was successful when I was really like behind three payments. And so it created this really pressure cooker inside of me. And there was a couple of moments I can point back to my life where when things fell apart, I completely fell apart. And it was like those moments where all of those pent up emotions came out, but they didn't come out in a healthy way. I turned to alcohol at a certain point. I turned to drugs at a certain point to sort of fill that void. And if I would have from the very beginning, maybe felt more comfortable about sharing along the way, I would have depressurized the whole time. And so I love that somebody, especially an educator, is taking this to share openness and how are you feeling? Because that's so important. What happens inside of our bodies if we don't share it, especially at a time when we've been isolated more than ever, at a time when we're, in a post-pandemic, still pandemic world where it's like, we're now even fearful of like being close to people. And it's just like, we're social creatures. And you right. can only be so social about the things that you're pretending that you're doing or that you're lying. And how many stories have we seen in the media, especially where these people build themselves up to be bigger than life and people are like, wow, look at how successful they are. And then they get cut off at the knees because what they did was really dishonest or what they did was unethical right. or what they did was totally hiding or what they did was a total fabricated lie. And so it's crazy, but this is something I think we should instill with our children. I do a lot of work with high school students through a couple programs here at UCI, and I love to share this concept up front. And I think the newer generation is more open to it than we were, because I think we live in a world that is more accepting. Mental health is a crazy challenge right now. So we're trying to change that stigma, and it only changes if people are willing to share. And I think especially for dudes who don't feel comfortable because it's not how they were raised, I would just encourage you to start small. You're not having to open up like you don't have to go lie on the couch and like, you know, emotionally open up. But when your wife or your husband or your partner or your friend says like, how are you doing? If you're not doing okay, just allude to it and watch. They'll ask you more about it. And even just talking about stuff, getting it off your chest helps to diffuse it. So it's crazy to think how much pressure we put on ourselves and how much we hide and how much we have to keep up with the status quo and keep up with the Kardashians. And at the end of the day, it's like when people are alone by themselves, you know, like there's so much value in them feeling worthy, feeling like they matter. And that means you can feel not okay sometimes. Like it's okay to not feel okay. But if you don't feel okay and you don't share it with somebody, it builds up, it packs up. You're going to become sort of distancing yourself from people, emotionally unavailable. How many dudes out there are quote unquote emotionally unavailable, and it ends up being the catalyst for the relationship going sour? So it's not easy, but there is value behind it.
Yeah, and I think not only the catalyst for losing a relationship, but it also then keeps you from gaining another one. That's like, okay, well, see, I tried to, that didn't work. And I have many friends that have spoken to me about the fact that they've said, well, you know, I'm never getting married again, or I'm never doing this again and stuff. And, you know, and I just try to be there for them and go, well, you know, let's talk about it, you know, just, you know, go ahead and share kind of what you're feeling. And I can see that as they start to share it and as the information starts coming out, you know, all of a sudden it's like it's dissolving. It's not controlling them as much anymore. So I couldn't agree more. And I also agree that, you know, each newer generation is doing it better. They are understanding a little bit more about why it's important to share these things. And I hope that it continues in that respect.
Yeah, and I will bring this back to business because I have had some really unfortunate experiences with business partners in the past. And I know in reflection, right, my experience has shown me that there were red flags along the way, but my unwillingness to even share seeing a red flag and confronting a red flag, or even taking that as like something about sharing how I feel about that, I would just suppress it, think, oh, the business is going in the right direction, where I literally found out that a business partner was stealing money under the table, building a multi-million dollar house in another state, all without me understanding or knowing. But if I really look back, it's probably because of my unwillingness to be honest about my feelings along the way. And so it's really ironic. The business partner I had and the person I co-authored this book with, I'm no longer in business with them anymore. And this book helped me to come really to terms with how unhealthy that relationship was. And I don't think I would have gotten out of it as my own accord. Things would have just blown up. But I made the decision to leave because this whole experience of writing this book made me understand how important it is, the things that I'm feeling, and making sure that the relationships that you have in business and life are ones that are compatible with you, your values, your ethics, and what you want to do. So it's a really crazy full circle for me where writing the book helped me to share what I learned, but I learned how important that is in real life to make the decisions that are best for me and my family and my mental health, right? So it's ditching the act can help you sever unhealthy relationships just as much as it can help you earn new healthy relationships.
Very well put. And continuing along that theme of keeping it on business, we've got another question that has come in or comment. And this one reads, I believe the majority of big businesses are driven by power and profits. Their open plans are to replace workers with AI and machines while minimizing their human workforces. In 2 short years, over 1 million small businesses, many of which were thriving and growing, have now closed their doors, giving some of the largest conglomerates in the world even greater power and business advantages. You speak of being human and being real to be successful, which I greatly agree with. What are your thoughts about the future that I have described above? And this is from Tanya in New Mexico.
Well, thank you, Tanya in New Mexico. I think you bring up a good point. There's a few things to unpack there. And so I first want to unpack this general idea of AI replacing humans. The way that I look at it is not as much of a, we're going to replace this human with AI. The way that I understand and where I think the value could be is where you're taking humans that are doing things that are that could be done by a computer, could be done by an algorithm, or could be done by machine learning, and you're removing them from that sort of mindless burden, and you're allowing the opportunity for those people to act in a more human role, in a more leadership role, in a role that maybe there won't be as many roles, but then it still frees that person to be more human in another organization. Mark my words, you will never have a completely AI-run company, right? That's not it. I don't think the machines are going to take over. And there's a really interesting debate between Jack Ma, the CEO of Alibaba, and Elon Musk. They were shared a stage, and it's a really fascinating, Tanya, I would suggest you go Elon Musk and Jack Ma. They have a debate on the future of AI. And Jack Ma really thinks that AI and technology will make us more human. It'll allow us to be more creative. It'll allow us to think and not be as tied up with certain things. Elon Musk has a bit of a different view, and it makes sense. His company Neuralink, they're literally trying to upload information like the Matrix into your brain. I mean, they're investigating that with pigs right now. And like, so on one side, there's a thought that AI will make humans more human. And on another side is that we will eventually sort of merge with technology, where you want to get a black belt when you just insert the chip, right? And so I think that I'm more towards Jack Ma And then I think technology will allow us to become more human. And the reason why it is so important moving forward that we are ditching the act is that we're sharing our thoughts and feelings about these things. And so I would never say we just need to be like, yep, let's just replace the conversations that happen around the job changes and the roles and in those organizations. And even at the small business level, you can leverage AI to help build your business, because maybe there's low level things that you can't necessarily hire for. Or I was in Kauai recently, and literally there's not enough people to work the jobs where like these restaurants are closed during the week and stuff. So I'll step back and say, I believe technology will make us more human, which makes it more important for us to communicate and articulate. And I think that as technology enters into the workplace, it will create more of a demand for less droney people, for people who actually have a voice, have passion, have creativity, and have innovation. That's my optimistic view of the future.
All right. And I just glanced up. We have about 3 minutes. Can you share a little bit about your 313 method that has been so successful with so many of your clients?
Sure. We talked about the question of how are you doing, yeah. Right? The evil step cousin question is, what do you do? And the question, what do you do, is asked all the time. And I argue that people actually don't care what you do. They just ask that out of formality. And then you share what you do and they kind of listen and they wait for you to ask them what they do. And then they tell you what they do and the other person's kind of half listening because they recognize that they weren't really listening to what they had said. And then they sort of shake hands or bump fists or elbows and they go their separate ways. It's a very surface level. So after working with thousands of entrepreneurs and asking them, what's your idea? What do? They take a deep breath and they just go on and on about what they do. And I just didn't find myself interested. So I started breaking down what I cared about. And I care about the problem that they solve first. And if I agree that that's a problem we're solving, then I'm definitely interested in their solution. And I'm interested in who that solution is for. And so these questions, what is the problem that you solve? What is your solution? And what is your market? I believe fundamentally those are the only three things that I need to understand your idea. And so the 313 is a formula, a process, bumper lanes in the bowling alley, where you step through these series of questions. And at the end of it, the result is that you can explain what you do in three sentences, the problem that you solve, your solution, and your market. You can say it in one sentence, those three things combined into one sentence, and then in as few as three words, using metaphor or analogy to use what people already know. So think of me as a blacksmith of branding. We can halo things that people already know and use a metaphor or an analogy to do that. So it's a really fun way for people who are trying to build their brand or for people who are starting to start a business is simple is powerful, but simple does not mean easy. And if you're interested in how this plays out, I actually have a podcast called the 313 Challenge, where I work people through the same process every time. And they go from having a hard time explaining what they do to now being able to explain it in three sentences, one sentence, and three words. So I really feel that you can have the best idea in the world, or you can be the most prime candidate for this role. But if you can't explain what your idea is in a short amount of time, or you can't explain why people should care about what you do, then it's not the best idea, and you might not be the best candidate.
Gotcha. And I think that leads right up to, for anybody, I mean, I assume that the book is, you can get it at most anywhere. You can get it, most
Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Yep.
Gotcha.
You go to ditchtheact.com.
Ditchtheact.com. That was going to be the next thing. So the best way to get in touch with you.
Yeah. The best way to get in touch with me is to go to ryan.online. So my name is Ryan Lyon, yeah. Right? Ryan. And if you want to find me online, you just go to your browser, Ryan ryan.online. There's no .com. So www.ryan.online. And you can find me and get it all there.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. I just really appreciate you coming on. I feel there's a lot of synergy here. I look forward to talking to you again soon. And again, for anybody out there, highly recommend the book. And, you know, again, don't just think of this as something that's just for business. There's every aspect of your life, I think, can be improved by just ditching the act.
And Alan, would you mind if I just wrap this up real quick?
Please do.
Here is the deal. Let me give it to you real. The key to connection is to learn to reveal, because you are not perfect and neither am I. And that is the exact reason that we see eye to eye, because everybody's different, but we are all the same. To be perfectly imperfect is how you win the game. And if you only showcase good and do not share the bad, you will miss connections that you never knew you had. Facegram, Twitter, book, are you LinkedIn? Are you snapping out of TikTok trying to fit in? Stop worrying about everybody else. Focus on being your authentic self, because when you learn to ditch the act and learn to be yourself, you open up a window to have people help you out.
I love it. Mic drop. Perfect.
Boom.
And when we talk offline, I think we have a lot more things in common. And even the thing about rapping, because when I was a speaker for the DARE program, I turned it into a rap.
Boom.
For,
that is awesome.
For junior high school kids. And because, but I love it, because what you're saying is, I'm going to do something that people are going to remember and put it in something that they can understand. I love it. And thank you so much.
You're welcome, buddy. I look forward to connecting offline and getting to know you a little bit more.
Me as well. And for everybody out there, well, our guest is training business leaders to be more human. You too can be good humans and make a positive difference in your life and those around you. So again, as I end each show, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Here, apply this to anywhere it hurts. It'll reduce your physical pain.
Thank you, Sensei. What about the emotional pain?
We'll learn to block a slap.
You don't spar with the Sensei.
Marty's Cobra Cove has no mercy on me. Don't rub it on. Rub it in.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.